few companies, not the steel companies. The steel industry doesn't want to come down and make its case and abide by the decision like everybody else. The steel industry wants something special, something nobody else can get. If we gave in to the steel companies on this issue, you could say goodbye to stabilization. If we knuckled under to the steel industry, the lid would be off. Prices would start jumping up all around us. Not just prices of things using steel, but prices of many other things we buy, including milk and groceries and meat. You may think this steel dispute doesn't affect you. You may think it's just a matter between the government and a few greedy companies, but it's not. If we granted the outrageous prices the steel industry wants, we would scuttle our whole price control program, and that comes pretty close to home to everybody in the country. It's perfectly clear from the facts that I've cited that the present danger to our stabilization program comes from the steel company's insistence on a big jump in steel prices. The plain fact of the matter is that the steel companies are recklessly forcing a shutdown of the steel mills. They're trying to get special preferred treatment not available to any other industry, and they are apparently willing to stop steel production to get it. As President of the United States, it is my plain duty to keep this from happening. And that is the reason for the measures I've taken tonight. At midnight, the government will take over the steel plants. Both management and labor will then be working for the government, and they will have a clear duty to heat up their furnaces again and go on making steel. When management and labor meet down here in Washington, they will have a chance to go back to bargaining and settle their dispute. As soon as they do that, we can turn the steel plants back to their private owners with the assurance that production will continue. It is my earnest hope that the parties will settle without delay, tomorrow if possible. I don't want to see the government running the steel plants 1 minute longer than is absolutely necessary to prevent a shutdown. A lot of people have been saying, I ought to rely on the procedures of the Taft-Hartley Act to deal with this emergency. This has not been done because the so-called emergency provisions of the Taft-Hartley Act would be of no help in meeting the situation that confronts us tonight. That act provides that before anything else is done, the president must first set up a board of inquiry to find the facts on the dispute and report them to him as to what they are. We would have to sit around for a week or two for this board to report before we could take the next step. And meanwhile, the steel plants would be shut down. There's another problem with the Taft-Hartley procedure. The law says that once a board of inquiry has reported, the government can go to the courts for an injunction requiring the union to postpone a strike for 80 days. This is the only provision in the law to help us stop a strike. But the fact is that in the present case, the Steelworkers Union has already postponed its strike since last December 31st, 99 days. In other words, the union has already done more voluntarily than it could be required to do under the Taft-Hartley Act. We do not need further delay in prolonging the crisis. We need a settlement. And we need it fast. Consequently, it is perfectly clear that the emergency provisions of the Taft-Hartley Act do not fit the needs of the present situation. We've already had the benefit of an investigation by one board. We've already had more delay than Taft-Hartley Act provides. But the overriding fact is that the Taft-Hartley procedure could not prevent a steel shutdown of at least a week or two. We must have steel. We've taken the measures that are required to keep the steel mills in operation. But these are temporary measures, and they ought to be ended as soon as possible. The way we want to get steel production, the only way to get it in the long run, is for management and labor to sit down and settle their dispute. Sooner or later, that's what will have to be done. so it might just as well be done now as any time. There's no excuse for the present deadlock in negotiations. Everyone concerned knows what ought to be done. A settlement should be reached between the steel companies and the union, and the companies should then apply to the Office of Price Stabilization for whatever price increase they're entitled to under the law. That is what is called for in the national interest. On behalf of the whole country, I ask the steel companies and the steel workers union to compose their differences in the American spirit of fair play and in obedience to the law of the land.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard the President of the United States. And now, our national anthem. The American Broadcasting Company brings you now an analysis of President Truman's address by ABC commentator Elmer Davis, speaking from Washington.
The President has just reported to us on a situation whose seriousness we can all appreciate, though a good many people will disagree with his analysis of how it came about. He puts the entire blame for the situation on the steel companies. Other people have thought that both the companies, the union, and the government have all, at various times, mishandled this situation. The question now is how we are going to get out of it. And the great question is whether the government alone can bail us out. Of course, the President holds that the government should not be, will not be, the only one to bail us out. He's not only directed the Secretary of Commerce to take over the steel mills and keep them operating, but he has directed John Steelman, the acting director of defense mobilization, to get the representatives of the companies and the workers down to Washington as soon as possible to get them to settle their disputes. And as he says, if they only come to some agreement among themselves, as they will have to do sometime, that is the way to get out of it. It's a question, however, whether the steel companies, after his excoriation of their policies this evening, will be in a very hospitable mood to agreement and negotiation. And it is a question whether the authority on which the President relies will be sustained by the court. His order to the Secretary of Commerce directing him to take over is merely, as he says, by virtue of the authority invested in me by the Constitution and laws of the United States and as President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces. It has been disputed whether such authority lies in the inherent powers of the presidency, and the steel companies were talking this afternoon of taking court action, presumably trying to get an injunction to prevent the carrying out of this executive order. The Senate Judiciary Committee, in approving the resolution which would extend the president's war powers for 60 days, carefully put in a proviso that this resolution should not give him any power to take over any private enterprise except public utilities. This is an issue that conceivably could be decided by the courts. The optimistic Mr. Ernest Weir, one of the more vigorous members of the steel industry, was talking this afternoon about congressional action. Whether he thought Congress was going to impeach the president or not, I don't know. There's no expectation that they were going to do anything like that, but there will be a good deal of argument on Capitol Hill as to the authority by which the president takes this action. necessary as some sort of action certainly may be. Now, the President's executive order says that the Secretary of Commerce shall determine and prescribe terms and conditions of employments in the steel industry. He shall recognize the rights of workers to bargain collectively through representatives of their own choosing, and so on. That does not say that he is going to make any wage agreements with them at all. In fact, the President specifically says that the companies and unions are supposed to get together and settle the argument among themselves. The executive order further says that except as the Secretary of Commerce may otherwise provide, the management of the plants that are comprised in this order shall continue their functions, including the collection and disbursement of funds in the usual way. And further, except so far as the Secretary of Commerce may otherwise direct, the existing rights and obligations of such companies shall remain in full force, and payments of dividends and so on may be made as usual. Whether this possible exception would indicate that the Secretary of Commerce may have the authority to segregate a part of the profits or to decide how much of the profits should be paid out to the steel companies is not clear to me from this language. I am not a lawyer and don't know what it means, but at least it does not clearly set forth that point of view. The President indicates that steel companies, after they have reached some agreement with the workers, which he obviously thinks should be on the basis of the recommendations of the Wage Stabilization Board, that then they can come back and ask for price relief, and he indicates that, in his opinion, that price relief would amount to about $4 or $5 a ton. The estimate given by the steel companies, the talk about an average price of $12 a ton, was clearly somewhat inflated, but it would be a very serious loss of prestige for them to be willing to accept the $4 or $5 a ton, and no doubt from their point of view it would be a serious financial loss as well. I am not enough of an economist to offer any opinion as to the estimates of the accuracy of the Wage Stabilization Board's recommendations, or as to how much of an increase in price they would legitimately justify. The President has expressed his point of view on this, and it is on that basis, presumably, that the government will attempt to settle the dispute. His harsh words about the steel companies will certainly not make them much more likely to be willing to settle than they are now, but we shall have to wait and see how that thing works out. Meanwhile, the basic thing that we have to consider, all of us, is what the President said at the very beginning, that steel is our key industry, it's vital to our defense effort, and we do not now have a stockpile of the kinds of steel, all the kinds of steel, that we need for defense. He has set forth very clearly the effect on the defense effort, and conceivably on the war in Korea, of a steel strike. He has laid down the ideas by which he would try to settle it. It remains to be seen, then, how these measures will work out.
You have just heard ABC commentator Elmer Davis speaking from Washington. America is sold on ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Contestants get a wonderful break on ABC's fabulous quiz show, Break the Bank, with likable Bud Collier posing the questions. The contestant can select the category he feels he knows best, thereby boosting his chances of breaking the bank. Subjects might be anything from professional wrestlers to rivers of the world to bestsellers. 8 correct answers in our quizzy breaks the bank for at least $500. You won't...
Curve is a little bit high, and it's one ball and two strikes with two out and nobody on. The curveball was just a wee bit high, and Meyer didn't like that call at all. He goes back to the rosin bag, takes a pinch. Now the ball is returned to him by Lopata. Red Munger is limbering up down the bullpen. I think Harry Burkine is going to pitch tomorrow for the Cardinals. Now the windup One ball, two strikes, the pitch to Billy Johnson. Curve low and outside for ball two, and the count is even. Two balls, two strikes, two men out. Billy walked in the third inning, and he struck out in the fifth. Remember, 1 week from tonight, gee, I hope we have this kind of weather in St. Louis for that opening game of the season against the Pirates. Boy, we ought to have a fine turnout. Here's the windup, 2-2, the pitch to Billy. Outside for ball three. Three balls and two strikes. Yes, sir, you're going to love this ball club, fans. At playing the type of baseball that Cardinal fans have always known in the past. A kind of baseball that became a little bit foreign in the past few years because it was never employed. The hustling brand of baseball, which you see plenty of action. Here's the windup and the pitch. Swung on. There she goes deep in the left field, way back there. It might be over. It could be. It is a home run for Johnson. And that makes the score 4-0. On 3-2, Billy Johnson lifted one over the left field wall. And that's his second home run of the spring. And the Redbirds now lead 4-0. He gave that ball a merry ride. Del Rice greets him as he trots across the plate. There's Gene Mike, the mouth, congratulating him. And the Redbirds lead now 4-0.